Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Defense Minister Gallant says Israel will wash its hands of Gaza once it has completed its ground military operation and vanquished Hamas. The Biden administration has given Israel the green light to conduct its military operation as it pleases. The goal, of course, is to completely erase Palestine and its people from the map. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we cross to George Samueli. He is a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's go to George in Budapest. We had the commander-in-chief, the president of the United States, Joe Biden, give an address from the Oval Office like none other in the history of the American presidency. It was deranged. It was special pleading. It was full of errors, assumptions, prejudices. Have I given enough adjectives, George? What's your thoughts?
Probably there could be more adjectives. I mean, I can't think of all of them. It was an absolutely disgraceful speech, filled with hatred and completely one-sided, prejudiced, bigoted view of what's going on in the Middle East. And it's of a piece with everything that he has done since October the 7th, which is that he hasn't stopped yapping about what happened to Israel. He hasn't said anything at all about what's been going on in Gaza. He hasn't said anything about the siege of Gaza. He hasn't said anything about the mass slaughter taking place in Gaza. So he managed very quickly to say, oh, Israel wasn't responsible for the attack on the hospital. He got that right on time. And then much of the speech didn't even have anything to do with the Middle East, which was supposed to this horrific attack on the Jewish people, which itself is, of course, a lie. But it was all about Ukraine, about how, you know, and all the terrible things that have been done to Ukraine and how it's so absolutely urgent that we do something for Ukraine. And of course, it is all absolutely dishonest, because if he really wants to come up with money for Israel or come up with money for Ukraine, he has it. He doesn't need Congress. He has emergency funds at his disposal. He can always do that. U.S. presidents have always done that. George W. Bush did that. He doesn't need congressional appropriation. So this is all, again, a political theater to present somehow that the horrible, mean Republicans aren't on board for these great and noble goals that the Biden has in mind.
You know, Martin, all three of us can remember all of the Camp David meetings with Arafat and all the Israeli leaders, through multiple administrations. But this administration, they're persona non grata in the Arab Muslim world right now. I mean, the President Biden was snubbed, which is very rare. Okay, with quote unquote nominal allies. Okay, I mean, it's really quite extraordinary. And as George said, as much as he wanted to emphasize Israel, he was looking for money for Ukraine. And I agree with George here, but he wants Congress to be culpable in all of these things. He wants to make sure that no one is absolved. You passed it, you voted for it, you're backing my policy. This is what this is all about. Okay, and it's interesting how Netanyahu did exactly the same thing with multiple Western leaders. Okay, so everybody, no one can say, that you weren't heard. Martin.
I think a lot of it is about his legacy as well. He's obviously thinking about...
Or re-election. I mean, is he Sleepy Joe anymore? I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, I've said before on your program, and I've written in my articles, that I do wonder how he'll make it to the next re-election at the end of 2024 with his mental state deteriorating all the time. He gave a speech just recently in Hanoi where his spokesperson actually cut his microphone and actually wrapped it up. That's how bad it is. When Joe starts gibbering, he's got people who jump in very quickly and drop the levels on the mixing.
I think the case is they started playing jazz music. Okay, so that's his cue to exit right.
Yeah, let's not talk about jazz music and Biden and Blinken playing the blues. And it's there's a really awful meme going around on the internet of Blinken playing the some blues music, and somebody's edited in all these appalling, you know, scenes of Gaza behind him. You know, it's not a joke, though. Unfortunately, we're living in unprecedented times. We've never seen anything like what's going on now in Gaza. And you talk about Joe Biden's speech. I have to apologize to you, Peter. I didn't see it. I didn't watch it.
You didn't miss much.
Forgive me. But, you know, Biden is very, very confused. Foreign policy has never been his thing, and he's just messing it up on a glorious level. And, you know, there must be people in the White House now running around, you know, in a panic, because we've got a situation now where you have this. The real story for me in Gaza is this day-to-day negotiation, this horse trading between the Biden administration and Netanyahu. You know, who is the dog and who is the tail? Who is actually running this entire operation? You know, we have completely whitewashed, airbrushed out the entire subject of 50 years of occupation. That doesn't exist. That's not popping up on any editorials. That's not even part of the narrative. You know, it's Israel.
Oh, no, Martin, it's worse. That's a Hamas talking point. That's what it gets down to. You know, George, you know, I've talked about this a lot. I mean, when we look at the situation in Ukraine, we look at the situation, Gaza and Israel, these are all craven choices. These are choices people make, okay? And, you know, we've had two meaningful attempts at having some kind of peace process in Ukraine, vetoed by the West, by the Americans. We haven't even heard from this White House, you know, restraint, negotiations. We haven't even heard those words. And then you have the European Union running around like like a chicken with its head cut off, okay, you know, in support of Israel. I mean, why? It's never really explained. These are craven choices, George.
Exactly right. They are. And I think that Biden is who he has always been. I mean, yes, he's a more demented figure now, and is obviously suffering severely from dementia, but he has always been a neocon. I mean, right from the start of his career, you know, the 1970s and 80s, he has always been an avid interventionist, an avid spokesman on behalf of the U.S. foreign policy-making elite. And this is what he's about. You know, again, back in the 90s, he was the most rabid advocate for bombing the Serbs. And So it isn't surprising that in his approach to the Middle East, he kind of immediately focused on where is the foreign policy, media, military industrial complex position? This is it. And he says, I'm not going to even make the slightest pretense, as previous presidents had done, of being even-handed. He's right away just saying completely identified himself with Israel. And as I said, he hasn't stopped talking about the one thing, which was the attack on October the 7th. Nothing at all about anything that's happened since then. And again, Blinken, he goes to Israel and says, I come here as a Jew. I mean, it is always unheard of for a Secretary of State. Again, nominally, the United States is still supposedly the honest broker, the mediator. And of course, he doesn't do it. Now, on the question of Ukraine, it's again, he has pursued this policy very single-mindedly, which is to sabotage any and all attempts to come to some sort of a settlement. So there's just been an interview published with former Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder, who says that he too had been involved in the early days of mediating something between Russia and Ukraine. He too, and he's explicit about it, was rebuffed by the United States. That's who he is. And nothing in that he has said since October the 7th would indicate any American interest in any attempt for some sort of...
But what makes this really nonsensical and even really dangerous, Martin, is that, you know, when you look at the correlation of forces around Israel, this is not 20 years ago, 25 years ago. We have Hezbollah, which is a very potent political and military force. And instead of, you know, taking a step from the away from the abyss, they're actually encouraging, even to the point where, do you think the Biden administration really wants a total outright? Because they want total victory, so you're going to have to make a total commitment. Go ahead, Marvin.
And that's where the dilemma is for Biden. Yeah. He wants to support Israel as much as he can, and Netanyahu's dream, but he hasn't got the balls. He hasn't got the collateral. He hasn't got the the verve or the money in the bank to go the full 9 yards, which is why I think it was a huge mistake to send the four or five destroyers and park them off the coast. Because I can understand the logic behind it. He was showing support to the Israelis. He's saying, I'm there if you need me. But you can't do that as just a token. Because when you do that to Hezbollah and the Iranians, you're really playing Russian roulette. You know, with not one bullet in the six-round chamber, but three bullets. You know, you're spinning the barrel. And, you know, who knows what will come out of it. The real worry for me is Biden is out of his depth. Doesn't really understand the implications of drawing Hezbollah or Iran into a regional war. The Israelis know they can't fight a war on two fronts. It's just too big, it's too extreme, and the Americans would never, ever support them with such a venture. So what have we got left? We've got a lot of paper tigers in the room pretending to be powerful and flexing their muscles, but at the end of it, it's just all narrative and lies and manipulation. What Netanyahu is doing is he's squeezing Biden. He's got him by the throat, and he's saying, look, I can easily exterminate 100,000 Gaza people tomorrow. They can drop dead like flies. How are you going to handle that politically in your country with the press? You know, he's got him that tight. And that's what this whole humanitarian so-called project is all about, letting 20 trucks in? 20 trucks?
Well, Martin, extending your argument, and I'm going to name this program Erasing Palestine, because that's what it's all about, okay?
Yeah. And Holocaust.
There may not be another opportunity coming. You know, every time there's a crisis, it's turned into an opportunity for these people here. And that's what Netanyahu's government wants. They want to be able to commit an atrocity and get away with it. George. Go ahead, George.
Yes. Well, I think so, but I think it's a doomed venture to erase Palestine. I mean, Israel has tried that before with not any great success. I mean, its problem is that, you know, yeah, we're going to erase Palestine, we're going to do this, we're going to do that and the other, but you actually have to do it. You have to go in there and do the job. And Israel has shown itself in the past to be unwilling to do that job because it would then have to sustain enormous casualties itself. And it doesn't want to do it. Yeah. You know, we have to talk about, you know, tens of thousands of dead Israelis. And Israel has shown that it's not willing to do it. So at the moment, I mean, it's all bluster. I mean, you know, weeks go by and they haven't done anything. Oh, we're about to go in. We're about to go in. I mean, maybe they will. But from everything that we know of Israel in the past, they don't actually like to get into hand-to-hand combat. They can pulverize. They can starve, they can deny medical treatment and so on, and threaten, but they don't like sending in their infantry.
Okay, well, I'm going to jump in, Jan-Tug. We have to get a hard break here. And after that hard break, we'll talk about the possibility of Israel's land war against Gaza. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the Home Edition to remind you we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to Martin. Let's talk about the possibility of a land war here. Over the last few days, pep talks from the defense minister got on to the troops. You know, next, you can see Gaza over there. Soon you'll see Gaza from within. We have all of these, psych ops, you know, for the media and all of that. But realistically, I think it's, as George has already mentioned in the first part of the program, it's very, very problematic. But the problem is that, Martin, the Israel's calling card in the region has been deterrence. Now, that deterrence was undermined on October 7th in a major way. And it's only deterrence and fear that keeps Israel safe within it doesn't even define its borders, but what it calls itself the State of Israel. But it needs to get that deterrence back, or else there, a whole world of bad things are going to happen here, one way or another. Martin.
Yeah, the main bad thing is that the possibility of the deterioration or complete collapse of Israel as we know it. I don't think that's an exaggeration. I think that's what the stakes are. I think, and Netanyahu knows this. He's got so much political pressure on him to pull a rabbit out of the hat. Most Israelis blame him for October the 7th. But I don't think most Israelis are behind him with this idea of a new onslaught, a new campaign on the ground. Look, I was in Lebanon for 7 years. I covered Israel a lot. And I can tell you one of the worst or best kept secrets in the Middle East is how poor the Israeli army is when we talk about infantry. They've got very good tanks. They've got very sophisticated weapons. They've got a very good air force. But infantry, men on the ground, boots on the ground. Israeli soldiers aren't that good. And when that was proved when they took on Hezbollah in 2006. I was there, reported on it, you know. And that's the big worry for Netanyahu. He can send in tank divisions into Gaza. Some of those tanks will be blown up. Some might even be captured, you know. But when the real fighting, if he's going to take on Hamas in Gaza, will be on the ground, will be soldiers. And how many, what's the magic figure? How many can he afford to lose and how many can he not afford to lose? I would say hundreds. I wouldn't go with George's figure of thousands. I would say when it gets to 500, 600, 700 IDF soldiers slaughtered.
Yeah, but the dilemma is, can he afford not to go in, George?
Can he afford not to go in? Well, he has options. I mean, he can turn to Biden and ask Biden, really, well, why don't you tell me not to do this? Why don't you tell me, hey, you better not do this. We don't want a bloodbath. All right. Well, if you say so, I'm not going to do it. So that's a way to get out of it. He says, well, I couldn't do anything because the Americans, you know, stayed my hand and we can't fall out with the Americans. So that is a way that he can get out of this. So, I don't disagree with you, Martin. I mean, it may be hundreds. I mean, it may be thousands. But the fact is that Israel has lost hundreds in the past in wars, and you know, they managed to overcome them because victory at least was successful at the end of the road. After all, they lost about 1,000 people in the 1967 war, but nonetheless, they continued, you know, breaking out the champagne for years subsequently. But in this case, it's hard to see what this victory would look like. They're not going to destroy Hamas. I mean, Hamas is, you know, it's well dug in. They're not just going to go in and dig them out house to house. That is a very, very messy operation, not just house to house. They'd have to go through the tunnels and everything. That's not going to be an easy task, you know, going through all the tunnels. So, you know, if they lose even, you know, several hundred, several thousand without any successful outcome at the end, well, then that will have been a failure. Then the question is, you know, well, how far would Israel go? And that's an interesting question. How far is Israel willing to escalate? Is Israel willing to use nuclear weapons?
Exactly.
Everyone else, you say, no, of course not. I don't know if that you can say the same thing about Israel.
Oh, I think it's very much on the table here because the stakes are so high. Because, Martin, we've just heard over the last, 2 weeks is that, you know, we don't negotiate with terrorists. The Israeli government doesn't want to negotiate with Hamas over hostages. Qatar is doing that, you know, other NGOs and whatnot. And then you do a reverse and decide we're going to leave Hamas standing after everything that's been said. See, words matter. Words matter a lot, and you can't if words were bells, you can't unring them. Okay, and this is the dilemma. Again, I keep stressing these are all been choices, and now reality is setting in here. And again, like I said, Martin, is that it's deterrence. They've lost that. Go ahead.
They've lost the deterrence, and I think if much time passes, Netanyahu will lose the credibility of being this great war dog, this great leader. Pardon, excuse me.
I think he's already toast. I mean, whatever resolution there is, he's out the door. I wouldn't be surprised if he has a plane on the tarmac fueled up. Go ahead.
To go back to George's point, though, I think he's right. But I think that the most likely scenario is that he doesn't launch a huge ground offensive. He doesn't need to. What I believe very strongly, and I've been blasted on the internet for saying this, I think they're looking at a policy of repeating the Holocaust. I think they want to starve hundreds of thousands of Gazans. You know, they don't need to send their soldiers in and fight Hamas. You know, the effect that I would have on Hamas, it possibly might break the will of a lot of young men. Or, you know, that's the way the Israelis are thinking. And if Biden is not strong, if Biden is not firm, you know, we will see a West, a complicit West, that is somnolent to these realities that they're looking at, and they'll just close their eyes and pretend that this isn't really happening. And both sides will be talking, the Americans and the Israelis will be talking about a political conundrum. You know, we've reached a stalemate. We can't quite decide what to do. But in the meantime, another 100,000 people just drop dead like flies. You know, and I think that's possibly one of the main things that Netanyahu is looking
at. Well, gentlemen, if there isn't a land incursion, a land invasion, then what Martin has just said there is the policy. From what I can tell, I obviously do not watch CNN, but I've been told in the last few hours that they do all of their reporting from comfortable places in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. Yeah, they don't show any images of Gaza at all. Okay. Yeah. Just talk to people, unfortunate people that have their loved ones in captivity on the Gaza Strip, but that's about it. So my point, George, is to reinforce what we've just been said here. You just don't report on it, just as the population is culled. It's a culling, George.
Yes, it is. And I think that, the siege of Gaza will continue with obviously the objective in mind of just simply killing off this population. But even if CNN doesn't report, and even if the Western public won't know very much about it, the people in the Middle East will know about it. Yeah. And then it will have Israel will have difficulties avoiding a wide-scale war because the people, you know, Hezbollah will know about this. They will know that you are basically just starving a population to death. And that would still, Israel will still have that problem on its hands, which is that Hezbollah will get in. I mean, there'll be at some point.
Let me ask that to Martin. I think that's an interesting point here. So if we agree that the land invasion is just hype in lieu of another policy, basically ethnic cleansing, do you think Hezbollah would stand by and watch? Because the theory of the case right now is that Israel is hesitant to have a land invasion because it'll see Hezbollah enter the conflict on the side of the Palestinians. But even if the policy is just starving them out, culling, do you think Hezbollah would intervene even under those circumstances?
At some point, yeah. I mean, Hezbollah and Iran, contrary to what most Western analysts might like to think, Hezbollah and Iran are playing a very, very cool card, keeping a very cool head and watching the day-to-day situation develop. And I think if we get to that point where we're looking at where it's clear that is the policy, then I think you'll see at least a certain amount of distractive attacks from Hezbollah along the border, scuffles, cross-border exchanges, Golan Heights exchange of artillery. That will be the thin end of the wedge, and then they'll see how Israel, you know, plays to that. Look, the big worry here, the Arab leaders, that you know, are all worried now that this is going to escalate regionally. And I wonder if Netanyahu is thinking of the northern border and another war with Hezbollah as a counterweight to what he's not doing in Gaza. You know, he may think that there are victories there. But the Americans know that Hezbollah has approximately 100,000 rockets, which are quite sophisticated and are programmed, as we speak, targeted to key military installations, power stations, government buildings. You know, and there's no way that they're going to America is going to allow that to happen. But the worry is miscalculation, and the worry is that we are being cheated by Netanyahu, and at a certain point, he will create a false flag attack between Hezbollah and those American ships. And that's my worry. That's what I think the Arab leaders.
Excellent analysis. But George, why is the United States supporting Israel the way it does? I mean, what is the strategic interest, security interest? This is what befuddles me, has confused me all my life. Why?
Great question. Yeah.
Yeah, no,
I don't know if it's answerable. I'm putting George on the spot as I usually do, but he does it. Usually comes back with a good one. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, I don't know if I can come up with a good one because I don't think it's a very good answer for this because never has Israel done anything at all for the United States to strengthen the United States' position. I mean, the United States has formulated its foreign policy almost from the beginning, from the time that the State of Israel was created, which was solving the refugee problem, adhering to Resolution 242, withdrawal from the occupied territories, no settlements, then eventually a two-state solution. All of these positions that the American government has adhered to, Israel has just basically defied the United States. We also know about all these things like the attack on the USS Liberty, which was never explained, you know, the Lavon affair, you know, go on and on and on. Israel has never done anything at all for the United States, but yet the United States is continually showering gifts on Israel and asking nothing in return. And
well, you know, it's really interesting, gentlemen, you have to end on this point here, but going back to Biden's speech, he's absolutely to the hilt supporting two ethno-fanatical regimes, one in Israel and one in Ukraine. Where are those rules-based order, gentlemen? I don't know. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.